Joining us now to talk about all that, he covers college football here in the South for the SEC and more 24/7 with First Coast News as well. You can catch him on the 1010 XL radio shows and College Sports Notebook. Brent Baer joining us each and every Monday at 5:30. Brent, we appreciate your time as always.
Well, glad to do it. And may I also add a new podcast with my friend Travis Ryer, and it is called Second Helpings. And
Second Helpings. Can you go ahead, Brent, when we're done here, can you go ahead and send me a link or anything, and we'll go ahead and promote that?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's the SEC in Second is capitalized. How clever is that?
That is. Right? I like that. And believe me, I actually live vicariously through your show today at Moe's. I took a to-go order home, and I ate it in the car. So there you go. That's a true story. I'm not proud of, but it was Moe's Monday. Hey, it was. But when it comes down to looking right now, Brent, at the Florida Gators, let's start because that's the first team as we get ready after the bye week for Georgia for the world's largest. But you got Florida and Georgia, and before that game, though, it's really two teams going in different directions. Last year, Florida wins against Georgia. They look like the better team. It has done a complete 180 since last year around now. And if you look, though, is this Gator team, what is the biggest problem, if you had to say? Is it not knowing who the quarterback is? Is it Todd Grantham? Is it Dan Mullen? Because there are a lot of people to blame after that loss to LSU.
There really are. There are a lot of culprits from that game. Does it amaze you like it does me? How do they go into a game like that after LSU beat them last year and be as listless and unprepared as they are, particularly to start the game? Mullen has been loyal and, frankly, obstinate in keeping Emory Jones in, when I think even he knows Anthony Richardson is a better quarterback. I mean, Richardson just makes things happen. And in fairness, Mullen gave Emory Jones a real opportunity. Truthfully, it just really didn't work. So, or it didn't work the way he thought it should. And Chad, how do you explain LSU running? This wasn't smoke and mirrors, was it? Running the same play over and over again and knowing that Florida could not stop.
Brent, I was watching it. My dad and my mom are in town. They're both Florida Gator alumni. So we went over to the Northwest Florida Gator Club before we had our own game with UWF. And I'm watching it with the Gator alumni. And there was just a, you know, are you serious kind of? I mean, because, look, Max Johnson, that team, I think he's going to be decent. His dad played in the NFL, won a Super Bowl. But it's still one of these that you look at that LSU team, and that's not a good football team. This is a team that's been dominated by a lot of – I mean, they've lost games to not good teams. UCLA beat them, other teams like that. And they flat out just looked better. We said at the beginning of the week, Drew and I said it, and Coach K and I said it, Coach K Stevenson, who used to play for Florida, we do a show together, and we talked about it. And I said, there's nothing to tell me that the Gators should be an 11.5-point favorite over anyone outside of pretty much Vanderbilt at this point. And I even said something about the money line at like plus 400. This is one where somebody's going to swindle Vegas, and that's exactly what happened because LSU not only won the game, it wasn't an upset, even though Vegas said it. They just looked like the better team.
Well, and see, what people forget is even though they lost Kayshon Boutte to the end of the year, they basically lost Derek Stingley, and they've also lost way too many other guys. They have a roster full of five-star players. Not everyone's five-star, but they're pretty close. But Chad, I'm telling you, the thing that I hear more than anything else, and unfortunately, this is going to be the downfall. You asked me what the overall situation is. Here it is. The downfall of Dan Mullen at Florida will simply be he could not recruit better players than the teams he faced. And Dan believes that he can coach them up and that they will win championships with that. But the problem is they are, 10, 12-8 in the rankings, and that's fine. But you and I both know, Chad, how many teams are in front of them? In the SEC, they may, you know, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. They're number 8 in the nation. Well, they're probably, what, 4 or 5 SEC teams in front of them in the standings.
Absolutely, Brent. And it's been crazy to think right now when you look at in the SEC and how they've been playing that you got a team full of guys that looked – I mean, it was, what, 5 weeks ago,
sure,
we were saying they looked like Alabama in the trenches, and,
right,
and now they're
right,
this bad. There's no excuse for the way they're playing. And that,
no,
and you know what? That does fall on coaching.
Sure it does. Well, and there's no doubt about it. And look, the and he may end up being the scapegoat, but they're just at the point now – to where he's going to make a change with Grantham, or I mean, could it be? And you, I've seen those on Twitter. I'm guessing you have to. One of the more difficult things is some of the Gator beat writers talking about the fact that they have heard that Mullen simply doesn't want to be there. And if look, when you got that circulating around, that is a real problem for your program.
So one of the things I'm going to transition away from Florida, Brent, real quick. So one of the things that we saw over the weekend.
They would like that. The Gator fans would.
I'm sure they would love that.
Yeah.
Coach Saban was asked about this today, about the whole deal with Tennessee and Ole Miss and that debacle and protecting his players. And this is one of the reasons why I can't stand when fans storm the field. I guess Coach Saban said, and he showed on camera, he got a bruise,
yeah,
from – when Texas A&M stormed the field. Is this something that, obviously, this wasn't even a storm in the field, a field incident, but how embarrassed should the University of Tennessee be? I mean, we've seen Greg Sankey come out. I believe we saw one of the chancellors at Tennessee come out and talk about how embarrassing it is for the school to have the fans throw in, I mean, a golf ball at Lane Kiffin. I mean, who knows if that hits him in the head, what type of injury that could cause, but how embarrassed should they be for that? And is this anything that, you know, maybe, I guess, convinces the NCAA or whoever to stop allowing fans to storm these fields? Because we always talk about player safety. I mean, all it takes is one idiot to go up to Coach Saban and clock him in the head for there to,
sure,
be, you know, some sort of an uprising.
Well, there's a couple bits to this. First part is incredibly embarrassing for Tennessee. They're fortunate they play at Alabama instead of in Knoxville this weekend. My concern, guys, is this is an indictment on society and our culture and where we are. And that's the thing that concerns me the most. As far as civility and being fair with people, the bigger picture is this. Greg Sankey in the SEC furious about this. And there would be some kind of statement. I know they fined Tennessee, but look, you don't gain anything by fining Tennessee. And I don't know all he's going to do yet, but what really raises Greg Sankey's ire about this, the commissioner of the SEC, is see, this cost them dearly with their image, and it cost coaches with recruiting. Other conferences say, look, you go play down there, they're going to throw things at you. So I think you're going to see Sankey handle this very swiftly and very quickly. And again, we don't know all he's going to do, but this is very serious. He knows it. And the other thing about it is, guys, don't think for a minute that the other two things involved with this is, thank God that someone didn't get hurt. As far as insurance is concerned, and where that would have been. And the other thing is, you're talking about advertisers going to Sankey and saying, look, next time we're out with you guys, it may be for less money because we're having these debacles at these stadiums, and we don't want our name to be involved with that.
Well, and I thought Lane Kiffin handled it very well as well when he was getting asked questions afterwards. But Pete Thamel had tweeted this out. So they got fined $250,000, and then the University of Tennessee will and the statement says, be required to use all available resources, security, a TV video to identify
the
individuals, and then it said they got to review their
– Wait, they're looking for them?
Yeah.
Okay, guys. Hey, Brent. It's good to know you, man. Hey, I'm heading out, guys.
I'm
sorry. No.
Well, they have to review, you know, the procedures and the alcohol availability, which is interesting
right.
that they're almost blaming it on alcohol more than just, you know, the absurdity of were. And the worst part about this, too, the most embarrassing part, is that Tennessee still had a chance to win the game.
That's right.
And it was quite,
absolutely.
It's quite ironic that they couldn't stop throwing stuff onto the field, but then Joe Milton decided to run the ball with three seconds left and didn't know what in the world he was doing.
No, that whole thing was a debacle. And I was watching the end of it because actually I was able to – I got home that night after covering the Ice Flyers game down here, and I was able to watch it because
–
There was like 2 hours worth of it. So all the other games kept ending, and that game was still waiting. But it was just bad overall, and – you know, Lane Kiffin even, it's so funny to see Lane Kiffin taking the high road on so many things this year. You know what I mean? Like, in the past, Lane Kiffin has always been the easy one to point fingers at, you know, all the jokes and the things that he's made mistakes. But it seems like Lane Kiffin keeps on taking the high road on things because he was like, hey, I thought it was funny they made jokes about me in Tennessee. I thought it was great. He played along, but he goes, none of us. He was trying to talk to them. When they were talking about it, he was trying to get his players off the field and win that game.
Yeah.
And I didn't blame him for it because they could have got seriously hurt, the things that were getting thrown at them. And at that point, though, it would have been – and those refs, you could tell, like they agreed with them, but it would have been a horrible – you want to talk about a mutiny in the parking lot if Tennessee, which they still had a shot to win, they're already ticked, and then you end the game with 50 seconds left when they're trying to come back.
Oh, yeah,
so
absolutely.
So they knew that's probably what the conversation was like, guys, I understand it's dangerous, but we all want to – we're fearing for our lives now. This is like a Brazilian soccer game where the guy got beheaded with a Bushido blade in the back of – this is real, ref, he made a bad call, and then he got like put in the back of a corner and taken off with a sword. But when it comes down to this game right now, I think Tennessee showed a lot of poise coming back. I think Josh Heupel's got him in the right direction. And some of the younger coaches, like Sam Pittman, it started off like he was the man. Sam Pittman's still doing an incredible job with Arkansas. I think Brian Harsin's done a solid job with Auburn. Drinkwitz probably was drinking way too much of the Drinkwitz Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
He needs to
stop.
But overall, I think Shane Beamer's just in a horrible situation. Shane Lay, same thing with Clark Lay. But when it comes down to looking at what Heupel did, I think a lot of people didn't think it was going to work out. He's doing a heck of a job over there. He really built them quick because they were not a good team 3 weeks ago against Bowling Green in Pittsburgh, and they look competitive now when that game did not look competitive for most of it. I just want to ask you the question, though, Brent, to get back to this, because we do have to take a break, and it's important, I think, to ask you with more knowledge on this covering the SEC. With Ed Ogeron, who is your front runner? I think there's names like Billy Napier and even, you know, Lane Kiffin, names like Chadwell over at Coastal Carolina have been thrown out, but who do you believe is a front runner in your heart for the job?
Well, Mel Tucker's been mentioned. He's done a good job. And James Franklin, of course. But look, I don't think until you know who they're hiring that you can rule out Jimbo, because Scott Woodward, the AD, is him. They're best friends. So, and look, as incestuous as the SEC is, would that shock you if that happened?
What about Dave Aranda? You've always been high on him.
Well,
yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, listen, Dave Aranda's done a really good job at Baylor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, would he be ready for that right now? Because look, Chan, guys, Baylor's one thing, LSU's another, and in order to deal with that, you've got. And I know Aranda was there. But you've got to have a seasoned coach who can go in there and deal with all the different complexities, shall we say, at LSU.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun, and it's a good job still. I mean, 2 years removed from the best season in college football and overall. So, well, Brent, always appreciate your time. We could talk about so many other things. Georgia right now, I mean, do you feel right now that if you had to say today – is this the year Georgia wins it all? I know they've been waiting 40 years to hear that, but do you believe in your heart this is the year they do it?
The only thing that makes me not say that would be if they somehow mess up the quarterback chemistry by trying to get JT Daniels back either too soon or to force him in against Florida. Because, listen, right now the mailman in Stetson Bennett, to me, is the better quarterback. Makes better decisions, makes better throws, very few mistakes. Listen, in the previous game against Kentucky, 69.5%. You can't do much better than that, can you guys?
No. And it was crazy. It's crazy to think too, Brent, that at the beginning of this show we were talking about how JT Daniel and also in Oklahoma, Spencer Rattler were two of the top Heisman candidates.
That's right.
Their teams are still undefeated. They're both in the top four, and they make the college football playoff today. And both of them are now pretty much in the eyes of the beholder backups with the way that Williams played this week, Caleb Williams, and also with us, a guy like Stetson Bennett. It's crazy to think that that's happened with two undefeated teams.
Absolutely unbelievable. I agree with that totally.
Well, Brent, always great to catch you, and looking forward to talking to you again here next week.
Good. Thank you, bud. Take care.
All right. Make sure to send me the link for the new show.
I will.